You ready to go?
I bring it on my staff.
You ready to go?
I'm ready. Hey, I want to ask you.
Yes.
How was your special orders Friday?
I didn't give that one.
Oh, good. You're ready. You're saving that one.
I am, because I was told by Drew that there ain't any substance to it, that he is working hard. So.
Okay.
Judiciary Committee meeting will now come to order. We have a quorum present, that being Senators Terrio, Cowdery, and Chair Taylor. The first matter we have before us today is sponsor substitute for House Bill number 34. And that was sponsored by Representative Liesl McGuire, who is present. Liesl, would you like to give us a brief introduction of your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Appreciate your taking the time to hear this in such a timely manner. Briefly, a little background that I'm sure most of you are aware of. Alaska has become one of the most forward-thinking trust states. Our 1997 Trust Act, which many of you here in this room participated in drafting, has placed us right beside Delaware as one of the premier states to invest in trusts in. In light of that fact, those laws need to be carefully scrutinized and revised as changes are made, primarily through court interpretations of laws. What happened is that the original Trust Act was drafted with sort of a broad brush, and the basic idea was to create a trust industry here in the state of Alaska. The sideboards put on it were that it had to be an Alaska trust company, and accordingly, Alaskan jobs would be created. Those corporations obviously pay corporate income tax and property tax. But there were a few areas that the specifics fell by the wayside. Last year, your body passed on to us Senate Bill 162, which the House concurred with and was signed by the governor, which addressed the first deficiency that was discovered. And that deficiency essentially was that there was a tax consequence when you wanted to give a special power of appointment, if you wanted to use a special power of appointment to create a successive special power of appointment. It sounds like rather technical language, and it is, but it's an important distinction that needed to be made in our statutes, because the consequences would have been rather dramatic had our court interpreted our law. It created a problem known as the Delaware tax trap, and if you notice in your bill packet, there's an article on the Delaware tax trap, but essentially it's this notion that if you use that special power of appointment to create a successive power of appointment, there will be an immediate tax consequence in the form of an estate tax from the federal level. Clearly, that was not the intent of this legislature in passing that. And it was an oversight and very technical language. So SB 162 was supported unanimously in both bodies and by the governor and passed on. The bill that is before you today, HB 34, is an effort to correct another technical problem that was discovered in the bill. And I think one of the best ways that I could explain it would be it's the statute as it reads describes fruit. And if a court were to go in and discuss apples versus oranges, and specifics about oranges, there may be a problem. In other words, again, too big of a brushstroke was used in creating this particular section, and a distinction wasn't fettered out between presently exercisable general powers and those of testamentary general powers. As you well know, all three of you, presently exercisable general powers are those that can be exercised within your lifetime, inter vivos, and testamentary general powers are only those powers that can be exercised upon your death through your will. The bill that I have before you doesn't change any policy. The policy has already been adopted and enacted by the legislature. What it does is it cleans up the language to effectuate the purpose that's already been passed. And in doing that, it looks at the distinction that courts have made between presently exercisable general powers and testamentary general powers. And what it does is it says that they vest at different points in time based on how the court interprets them. A presently exercisable general power is viewed as complete ownership, and therefore it's viewed as vesting at the time of its creation. So the first part of the bill makes it clear that, yes, it will vest, and it will vest at the time of the creation of the new appointment power, and that's according to everything that we have learned from the way the courts interpret it, but we're going to assign it a period of 1,000 years. So for all intents and purposes, it will continue on into perpetuity. For all intents and purposes, it abolishes the rule against perpetuities. 1,000 years is a long time, but it creates a very specific vesting point. Contrasted with Section C, which states that if it's a testamentary power of appointment or a successive non-general power, that it will vest, but it will go back to, it's a relation back concept, it will go back to the creation of the original document, and the vesting period will then be 1,000 years from that point. It sounds really complicated, but I think you all understand it very well, and certainly had an opportunity to look at SB 162 last year, which got at the original problem, the original Delaware tax trap problem, and this is just a further effort to ensure that we don't create tax consequences for the trusts that have been created to avoid them. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Senator Cowdery.
Yeah, on the top of page 3, where it starts at least 30 years, and there's some other things on the page 2. So can you explain that change after the death of an individual, the purpose of that?
Senator Cowdery, top of page 3, line 1.
Yeah.
What that is, actually, if you look at it, it's cleanup language. The second section, all of section 3, is legitimately cleanup language, and it was designed to make it more specific. The language of, after every power, we added of alienation, even though it could have been implied that it was a power of alienation, and then at the point where we say after the death of the individual alive at the time of creation, that's language that is actually pulled from, if you look on page 2, starting at line 13, that language in section 1 is already there. So it's an effort to put that language back into section 4 so that it's very clear. All of section 3 has absolutely no new effect whatsoever. It's merely a matter of cleaning it up language-wise so that it's very clear about what power you're talking about and at what point that power will vest.
Thank you.
Senator?
Yes, Senator Terry, I'll go ahead.
The retroactive provision, April 22nd, was that the effective date of SB 162?
Yes, it is. And to clarify, obviously, the purpose of that is so that those folks who created trusts won't have unpleasant consequences if something is ruled on. So it will date back to our last year's bill.
Representative McGuire, I really appreciate you bringing this before us because I started this process with this committee about 5 years ago, I think. Representative Joe Ryan worked with us out of the House to bring several of these pieces over also. I think we're talking of at least 6 or 7 bills. And our purpose was, as you stated, to make Alaska an attractive state or venue for the residents of a trust, and the overall purpose was not only to provide people with that benefit, but to enhance those businesses within the state that would be guiding and directing those trusts. My frustration has been that we have seen a small amount of investment occurring within the state with a couple of banks that have worked hard at recruiting, if you will, people to transfer their trusts into this state so those reserve funds and other things, investment portfolios, would be available. And we would have some additional jobs out of it. Tragically, this administration has failed to enforce those provisions that are really left up to the Department of Commerce, Banking, and Securities to enforce, And that is, as far as I know, nobody's been going in through this administration and actually auditing some of these financial institutions in the state that are really very actively involved in this process, but all of the work is being done through their main branch, which is located in Iowa or Kansas or some darn place. And we've seen hundreds of millions of dollars flowing into those banks down there and bootstrapping it off of banks up here as if they had a head office up here. They don't. And I guess my only inquiry was going to be to you. Have you or your staff had a chance to really look into that?
Chairman Taylor, actually, it's not a problem that has been brought to my attention prior to this committee hearing, but it's certainly something that we could look into. Obviously, I'm aware of the true success stories, the Alaska USA credit union trust companies and the key banks and those. So I wasn't aware of that problem, but it's certainly something that I can look into.
Well, there were those who wished to take advantage of the law, and but to do it without locating a primary or a head office in this state, and without any enforcement from banking and securities under the provisions that we passed, it means that if you've got a large multinational kind of bank sitting down south someplace, well, you write it up as if it's going through Alaska, and then you can do all these transactions, but the money actually ends up lodged in your bank down there, and there are no jobs or benefits that come up here out of it. I'm aware of the success stories, and I'm very pleased that we were able to do this for the various banking institutions. In fact, I was visited while on the Kenai one time by the one of the top bankers on the World Bank, who happened to be there fishing, and wanted and looked me up because he wanted to say thanks on behalf of people that he represented because of the hundreds of millions of dollars they had been able to place in trust within the state of Alaska. He was primarily working through the National Bank of Alaska at that time. But no, there have been some real successes here. What I foresee is probably a constant dribble of for the next several years of cleanup bills like this, because every time the tax courts or someone else makes a decision interpreting one of these provisions, then we end up with this, with whatever the name of the case is coming down the pike, and then we have to rewrite our legislation around to close off a loophole that some other court has now found. And that's, I think, part of the reason we're here today is because of that. But if you'd help me a little bit in looking into some of that stuff, I'd sure appreciate it. It'd be nice to get a response back from Banking and Securities and also the Attorney General's Office on the enforcement provisions and what they're doing about them. I have no other questions. Just wanted to thank you for bringing the bill forward. Senator Terrio?
Mr. Chairman, just before we take any final vote on this, I did just want to disclose that my wife is an attorney. She does work in the area of tax avoidance and trust creation. I have no idea whether she has created any trust within this window that's impacted by the retroactive section of the bill or not, but I did just want to give a general disclosure on that.
We do have two witnesses to testify on teleconference. The first I'd turn to is Dana Olson, and Ms. Olson is in Mat-Su. Can you hear me, Ms. Olson?
Yes, I can. I wanted to come before you today and become more educated and to get a better understanding how your bill on rule against perpetuity addresses property and property interests that have been either are futuristic interests or have been considered futuristic interests. I listened with interest so far, but you really haven't mentioned how the definition of alienation would affect to relating to the property and property interest. As you know, property cannot be made on a case-by-case basis. It has to have some definition in order to be property. Otherwise, you are simply eroding our 14th Amendment right, the right to own property. I have a couple of interesting situations concerning futuristic interest. And there again, I lack the understanding of your bill and how this will affect me. One of them, alienation, there is no definition that I could find in your bill on property interest. And it can be by effect. I give you a scenario of the Chase 1984 Chase Agricultural Homestead Lottery, where by effect I'm being, my property is being alienated by environmental court precedent. And this court precedent now is being considered at the SIP level, of which the petitioner wants to eliminate the effect of the court precedent and have a SIP revision. I have a problem with that being held to a standard of which the petitioner established, and then not providing me a means to be treated equally under the law. So I would have to ask that this committee consider the effect, and perhaps maybe even insert that the Chase Agricultural Homestead Lottery, if the petitioner who set the standard is going to want the standard changed, that we have some remedy. I have a problem with the date, a retroactive date, because there again, it appears to be in the state's best interest to change the standard, and there is no rationalization for why I would be should be exempt. I want to bring up also RS 2477, because it's alienation on property, and whether it was at some point it was a futuristic interest. And there again, there's no definition on alienation, but your date would seem to suggest that you will be creating different classifications of RS 247 claims, because it will be used as a defense claim to any asserted retroactive back to that date that their property interest alienation. It will give them an unequal opportunity to assert a defense claim, which I would not be able to. So I guess that's basically, I would like to see a definition of what alienation is as it relates to property interest. And also, alienation has to have a definition. Whereas in a trust basically is interpreted by its wordage, where property is asserted by statutory or code or whatnot, it will need clarification there. Thank you.
Yeah, Dana, I got to tell you, thoroughly confused me and the panel, because nothing within this bill that I'm aware of would impact in any way the subjects that you were discussing. This is a bill that would impact private trusts created by individuals who own property, whether it's real property or personal property, and the decisions that these people have made about how they want their property conveyed or held, and what the tax aspects of that may be. That's what this bill affects. And if anything, this bill would give you greater rights with the disposition or alienation of your property, either real or personal, than what you would have had under state law prior to the time we made these changes. And in fact, the changes that are suggested here are for the primary purpose of protecting individuals like you from paying additional federal taxes to the federal government because of the way in which they've placed their property for the protection of their wife or their children or their grandchildren and placed it in trust. That's the purpose of the legislation. There's nothing within this legislation that would, in any way that I can contemplate at least, impact either RS-2477, which is a federal right granted as against property in this state prior to the time it was even conveyed at statehood, nor is there anything that I'm aware of that would affect in a negative way your rights as an individual to sell, convey, or in any way alienate your own personal property, whether it's real property, dirt, or personal property, cash or bonds or jewelry. So, I mean, you've confused me thoroughly, Dana, and if I'm missing something, please correct me, because I'm not quite sure how your subjects relate to this bill.
Okay. I'd be glad to. First of all, I think there's I have followed your past bill in the last legislative session, and it was stated that it is the rule against perpetuity is a complex thing, and I'm not a lawyer, so.
Well, let me stop you. Let me stop you right there for a minute. The rule against perpetuities was to prevent a person like you, if you owned a piece of ground out there in the Mat-Su Valley, you could not, under the rule against perpetuities, convey your property to your heirs forever to be used only for a farm in the Mat-Su Valley. And that was because they ended up with people holding farmland in the middle of downtown London, and the city needed the land to expand into, but nobody could get access to the land, and they had to raise cows and pigs in the middle of downtown London. And so the old English common law said, wait a minute, why isn't this property coming back into the marketplace? Why isn't it turning over? Why isn't somebody either able to buy it or sell it? Well, they couldn't buy it or sell it because the original deed said it had to be used for that purpose forever. So they came up with a rule, and they said, you can't establish a piece of property and lock it up forever like that. It violates the rule against perpetuities because it was locked up in perpetuity. So that's where the rule comes from. And what we're saying here is that we are going to allow a trust to extend beyond the rule against perpetuities, which is, by the way, is measured by many different jurisdictions, measure it different ways, but normally it's like 80, 90 years plus lives in being. In other words, if you had a great-grandchild alive 90 years from now, the trust wouldn't terminate till that last great-grandchild died. So that you could, if you do it right, you can probably extend a trust even on land for a period of maybe 150 years. It otherwise would then have to come back into the mainstream of marketplace and so on. So that's what it's all about. It really, the rule against perpetuities limits people on what they can do. These amendments provide you and other people with a greater opportunity to tie up your assets for a longer period of time. And that's a policy call, of course, but that's what the legislature decided to do here. But
I think you're misunderstanding. First of all, my property doesn't relate to a trust. It's but it's being alienated from conveyance.
No. What's happened to your property, if you're impacted by an RS-2477, is that your concern?
Well, I have two issues. One is my 1984 Chase Agricultural Homestead Lottery,
yep,
which is a conveyance under state law.
Right.
All right. And basically the conveyance, although March 2000, the entry permit does not need a best interest finding, I am being impacted by a court decision, which is a form of alienation. Of which a standard has been set in the state, of which now a state agency wants to override by regulation and SIP approval this precedent case, which affected my homestead.
No, I think I understand the problems you've got, and there are two of them probably. There's the case that now has changed your relationship as, or your authority over the property, and that's the court case one. And you may have an RS-2477 concern, too.
Yes, I do. And the RS-247, as you have been working with the statute of limitations, I have asserted my claims time will be treated unequally, basically, than anyone of the future or present or the future, and I object to that.
Well,
you know, RS-247 under your theory of law, the state is a transference at statehood, then we are all treated equally. And I would think that if you were writing, as you're writing this bill, saying that there cannot be any alienation on property, what you would be virtually saying is that the RS-247 could not be alienating the property of any that were retroactively back to April, where the 21st of last year. So those would be in a different category than the ones asserted in 1998.
Yeah, let me assure you that that has absolutely, that language has absolutely no effect or impact on RS-2477 rights. None.
Well, it does in a sense because mine was prescribed already by federal survey.
Well, RS-24...
trying to assert by regulation the width. And also, in your prior bill on the rule against perpetuities, when something is prescribed under a transference theory, it doesn't enlarge. And so when you take 5 to 7 feet and you by statute, by regulation, want to assert that it's either 100 or 500 feet, that is a property taking. So this bill has some relevance to RS-247. What you were working on last year has some relevance. And the alienation aspect does have relevance.
Okay, I guess it does. I haven't seen it yet. All we're talking about is your ability as a property owner to convey to your loved ones or people that you want to have in a trust. All we're talking about is your ability to sell, convey, alienate your land over to them in a trust.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that the ruin itself is a greater capacity than what maybe your bill is talking about. It infers that it is. I read that it infers that it's talking about alienation and that it doesn't specifically exclude futuristic interest or interests that were futuristic at some point. Maybe if you had put a provision in your law excluding that, then I would feel more comfortable about asserting that it does not apply. But because there is no such language in the bill, I will have to assert that it does. One never presumes anything. It's simply factual. And the rule against perpetuity, that it affects alienation, it can affect conveyance currently as well as to my heirs. I have to do something pursuant to a court case of which now you want to, another state agency wants to override the court precedent. Therefore, I will be under a alienation, and the present petitioner, the oil industry, will not have to be under the alienation. And I object to that. There is no rational basis why I should be held to a standard of which they should not be held to a standard.
Dana, honest to goodness, I think you're talking about a totally different subject than what we've got before us. I know you think there's some relationship, but I can't for the life of me understand how it would do that to you. I understand fully what has happened on agricultural rights, and I've been fighting to try and reassert those rights along with Senator Green down here for some time. But that, believe me, Dana, is a totally different question. That's the question of how much land do you own? How big is it? Is it encumbered in some way by an easement? Are you allowed to use it for some purpose other than farming? Must you be constricted to farming only? Those are the kind of questions that you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about alienation of conveyance.
I understand that, but you're confusing the words alienation of conveyance alienation is a right that you would have under law to sell your property.
My property is under the Commissioner of Natural Resources.
I understand that fully, and it takes his consent because of the restrictions put on your land by the state when you first purchased that land. And I know there's been court cases on it, Dana, but that has absolutely nothing to do with this. In fact, this bill, whatever rights you have in that land, would allow you to do more with your land and more with your property than you are currently allowed to do under Alaskan law or federal law today. We're trying to expand your rights as an individual. We're not trying to constrict them. That's not true.
Okay.
Honestly, if that's not true, we're trying to expand the ability that you and your husband or family would have over this property to convey it in a way that would be more beneficial to you and your family and in which you would pay fewer taxes. That's what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you're going to then use it only for trust, then there is confusion on whether or not we're under common law or whether we're under state law. You know what I'm saying? Is you're using the rule against perpetuities, which has a legal basis and a legal understanding, to be narrowly interpreted for a specific purpose, and your specific purpose is, like you stated, relating to trust. But what I'm trying to say is your bill does not exclude nor state that it does not apply to futuristic interest. Had it done that, then I would feel comfortable about asserting what you're stating, but it doesn't say that.
Okay, well, thanks much.
Thank you very much.
Yep, Rudy Vetter up in Fairbanks.
Good afternoon, everyone.
How have you been, Rudy? It's been a long time since we had a chance to have a cup of coffee together.
Yeah, well, we'll have to do that one of these days.
I look forward to that. Would you like to testify on this bill, 34?
Well, just a little bit. I was going to ask a question. Does this apply, in the case that you are a member of the corporation, does that apply so that this bill takes care of your interest in the corporation, that you would pass that on, or is this only for personal property?
No, I believe this involves all forms of property, Rudy, and as a consequence, it would allow you, I believe, to place your corporate stock, say you were, you could either do it now if you were, because you are alive, that's inter vivos, and you could then also do it in a will, which would be a testamentary transfer, into a trust. Once you had transferred that property, your corporate stock, into that trust, could the trustee then move forward and handle or do things with that stock? Yes, they could, and in fact, this would allow them to do so literally in perpetuity. It would be a valid transfer for up to 1,000 years under the interpretation of this bill, which you would not be allowed to do but for. Well, actually, I overstated it just then. You could do that today, but without this language, your estate might very well, or your trustee at some time in the future who converted this stock to some other stock, would then be faced with an estate tax, and you would have to, or your trustee at the time would have to pay a significant amount of estate tax for making this this change in ownership, this alienation or change of ownership. So, that, believe me, I don't specialize in this field, and this is very complex stuff about trust law. But I'm advised that this will allow people like yourself to place valuable stock, valuable patents, other instruments of value into a trust, and then it will allow for greater flexibility on the part of your trustees, with less liability in the form of potential taxes. That's the purpose of the legislation, Rudy.
Okay, I think I understand it, but I also have one concern. I'm in some of property was considered void and illegal. So I hope the legal department has researched the word perpetuity, whether you could do that. I think you are doing it with the 1,000-year situation in here, and that should take care of it. Let's see, I had one other thought, and I've lost it for a minute. It looks quite good to me, and I don't know why Dana is so, I believe that was her name, why she's so concerned. There's one thing we must remember about all legislatures. Another legislature can come on in another term and change the law again. So you really find it pretty hard. I don't believe any legislature could put anything in perpetuity and make any law last forever. Because the succeeding legislatures that may be 30 years, they could change it too. Thank you.
Well, I certainly agree with that, Rudy. It's just great to hear your voice and hear you're doing well up there. We certainly can change things. Let me give you a little quick background on why we're here on this stuff. People in the United States, frustrated over our tax laws, took their money out of the United States and placed it in Bahamian banks. The numbers I've been told may be as high as $3 trillion of U.S. money is currently sitting in either European or offshore banks. It's sitting out there because those people didn't want to pay estate taxes on it when it got conveyed upon their death from their estate over to their children or to their wife or whoever. So what they did is they ran offshore with this stuff. Now, the IRS would like to have some of that money back in the United States, and we've been hearing about a lot of negotiations going on, but no federal laws have been changed yet. And what the federal law change they're looking for is that those people could bring their money back into the United States and would not have to pay an additional tax on it for their lives, but upon their death, then they would have to go through a normal trust and estate planning process. In anticipation of that, we in Alaska have structured our tax laws so as to provide them the same kinds of opportunities they were receiving in the Bahamian banks, basically to extend trusts beyond the rule against perpetuities and to provide for some additional flexibility. And in the process of doing that, we've changed Alaska's laws to the place where we're very attractive now as a place to put your investments, which would help people throughout the state. And what this bill's all about, Rudy, is just some cleanup language because of various federal tax cases that have come up on these subjects, to try and define in advance, before people end up going to court, the correct way of doing it so they don't get caught unawares and lose money back to Uncle Sam for tax purposes. And that's really all we're doing here. But could this be changed in the future? You're absolutely right. It could be changed this year, next year, or 10 years from now. Would it have the effect of wiping out the rule against perpetuities with these trusts? Yes, I think it would, but only in a prospective basis, more than likely. And it would establish a new rule if they wanted to put a new rule against perpetuities on it. So yes, you're correct, Rudy. Anything we do here can be changed, and let's thank God for that, because we never know if we're doing it right and somebody may need to change it on us. But thank you for coming out, Rudy. Any other comments? Rudy, thank you for coming out. I really appreciate the great things that you have done for this state and the work that you have done in the Fairbanks area on behalf of your friends and colleagues in the mining industry. And I look forward. I'm going to be up there this weekend, old friend. I'll be there on Saturday, and if I get a chance, I'll drop down to the coffee shop, and we can have a cup of coffee together.
Give me a call at 457-5509, 457-5509. There's a lot of things I want to talk to you about.
Rudy, I'd enjoy that, too. Okay, I'll give you a shot. Thank you.
Senator Taylor, can I just add a couple of comments? I just want to make a couple of comments. This is Representative McGuire, the prime sponsor of this bill, and I just want to make a couple of general comments to both of you who took the time to testify. I think the most important thing to remember is that this is a legislative policy that has been made. This is a construct, but that in any event, if you're ever going to consider creating a trust for yourself, putting specific corporate property into a trust, any of those types of things, you absolutely should seek out a trust and estates lawyer who has specialties in the area, who can explain the law, explain whether this is the right vehicle for you or not. It may or may not be. There may be another way to protect your property interest. And I just wanted to echo what Senator Taylor was saying, which is that this really pertains to private trust law. It's a very specific area of the law. And when you start getting into RS-2477s and things like that, that really is a separate area. And then the final thing I wanted to say was that you're right, Rudy, that there is no rule, there is a rule against perpetuity in the legislature, and things can't just continue on and on into perpetuity. So if at some point there were, let's say, a state income tax, God forbid, implemented, this area of the law may be revisited.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, thanks, everyone. It wasn't my intent to move the bill today. Members had asked to have a little more time to understand it. You have a little more homework to do around here, I think. And I think it's because of the unique nature of this type of legislation. So I'm going to let it cook for maybe another week or so, and then we'll bring it back up and move it out at the time. Yeah, go ahead.
Is that the extent of people to testify?
That's the only ones I have.
Is Steve Greer online?
He did not sign up to testify.
Oh, who's that?
Steve Greer, if you're there, we'd love to hear from you.
Yes. Steve, are you still with us?
My name is Steve DeVries, and I'm here, but I'm not. If Representative McGuire was talking about Steve Greer.
Yes.
My name is Steve DeVries, I'm here.
Okay, well, if you have any comments, Steve, we'd be happy to take them. Well, maybe you can tell me that did I tell Dana the right things?
Senator Taylor, I think as far as a rendition against the rule of perpetuities, you may want to consider writing a textbook.
Well,
I can't promise you, however, I would buy a copy.
Well, thank you for that. I'll give you a quick story. I think it's a fascinating one. Bob Ziegler's father, a wonderful gentleman named A.H. Ziegler. Both of them are long gone, God rest their souls. But A.H. Ziegler had read law for 2 years or three in a lawyer's office and felt that he was ready to take the bar exam. So he took the bar exam in Nome, Alaska. And the bar exam in those days was an oral exam conducted in an attorney's office. And so the bar would authorize an attorney in your town to examine you, and you would go to his office, where he and others would ask you questions. So A.H. Ziegler showed up in the attorney's office in Nome, and there were two other attorneys there. And the very first question asked of him was, please define for me the rule in Shelley's case. Mm-hmm. And A.H., in telling me this story, allowed is how he went on for about 20 minutes. And I was shocked to hear that, because I didn't think I could go on for 5 minutes on the rule in Shelley's case. But he had gone on for about 20 minutes explaining the complexities of that rule and was then interrupted by one of the attorneys examining him. It was the host attorney who'd asked the question initially, and this other attorney interrupted, and he said, Mr. Ziegler, you're wrong. The rule in Shelley's case is such and such. He said, which initiated quite a discussion among the three examining attorneys as to which one was right about the rule in Shelley's case. And he said that argument between the three examiners continued on for about another 25 minutes. He said, at which point one of the guest attorneys looked at the host attorney and said, my God, George, we've been in your office for over 45 minutes now, and you still haven't offered us a drink. At this point, George, the host attorney, turned to his safe, opened it up, took out a bottle of scotch, and apparently that ended the exam, and A.H. was told he had passed. So sometimes these arcane rules of law do have beneficial effects, I guess. But enough of my reminiscing here. Thank you so much for standing by. Is there anyone else on the teleconference that has a question or would like to give testimony on this bill? Anybody here? Okay, we're going to hold the bill till next Wednesday. It will be on the calendar, and it'll be my intent to move the bill out at that time. Thank you all for attending. We're adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.